This meeting is called to order for State Montessori Academy, Thursday, September 22nd at 8:19. Those in attendance are Jed Donahue, Kiara Panula, Beth Carter, Neela Duckworth, Yvonne Nass, Ryan Connell, Dwayne Sims, Aaron Carroll, Courtney Fox, Shonda Gilmore, and we have two invited.
Angela Angini.
And there are two invited guests this morning from Barbicane, Thornton and Company, Eric Willey and Pam Baker. The first thing on our agenda is the approval of our September 1st minutes. Hopefully everyone's read them. Are there any corrections or additions to those minutes?
I sent you some, but I don't know if they got me. I think it should say executive session. I don't think it has that topic.
I'm sorry?
I think it should say we went into executive session. It doesn't need to note the topic for why we went in, if I recall the rules correctly.
Right. Okay. It doesn't.
The revised was the same.
Yeah, it was.
I wanted to bring that up as well. There were no changes in the two drafts.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And that's probably I learned something because I did the changes and not Shonda. There you go, Shonda.
Okay, so
we know.
Angela, what was the change?
It just needs to say executive session, not the reason for why we went into executive session.
Yeah, I tried to take that out.
So you could just start with Angela, motion to go into executive session, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Any other corrections, additions?
And then in the when it comes to the motion, when you come out of executive session, you want to take out the language around what it, you just voted on what was in executive session,
right.
Not the topic.
And it was passed.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
Any other comments?
Do you see what I'm saying on that one, too?
Good out.
Yeah, thanks.
May I hear a motion to accept the minutes as corrected?
I'll motion.
Beth Carter's motioned. May I have a second?
Second.
Ryan Connell has second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried. Okay, the next thing on our agenda is our finance reports. Zeke is not here.
Do you want me to do it?
If you're willing to do it, yes.
That's fine. So you have the narrative. Does anybody need the narrative?
Nope.
I have a couple extra packets.
Yeah. We kept sending out new copies of everything.
Thank you.
There's a fourth packet. I just copied a couple. So if you look at the narrative for the monthly report, and Dwayne, jump in here anytime too. You were there as well. You'll see that we're at that 16.7% of the fiscal year, with the expenses around 11.8% of the fiscal year. So that's an important kind of gauge for us that we keep looking at. There was only a few local receipts that came in over the month of August. A couple were, I think, food services, some school activity money, but nothing major. We have started receiving our school district money, so our first school district local fund piece has come through more recently than this, but up through August it had not. So you see the 48% of our revenues collected. Remembering our revenues are going to be based on those April and May, or that May 1st count, which again was not our full enrollment number, so there will be some updates that happen throughout the year in regard to what we're expecting there too. And you'll see down where the proposed expenses are, obviously less than the proposed revenue, with a little bit of the information about the carryover. And the other piece to include is that we've set aside the summer pay now for the new staff, and that they have it now into year three. So we are fully up to date on the summer pay that we've set aside, and that does not sit in our carryover numbers. That's a number that's completely pulled out into its own appropriation. And then you'll see that the district per pupil revenues continue to be in question. The previously projected increase of close to $80,000, and the latest information we have from the secretary is that money has been reset and that we will not be receiving that money as of our last meeting. The information, so the clarification on this piece is that we did not budget for 100% of revenue coming in. So we budgeted at like 95 or 98% of what we anticipated. So on our budget, we're only seeing a $17,000 difference from what we anticipated because we under budgeted, right? So we were conservative in our number. And so we're actually only seeing the hit at about $17,000-$18,000 rather than the full $80,000. However, it really is an $80,000 hit we just budgeted under to make sure that we were covering our costs. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. And that's where we are with our finance report. Any other questions that people had as they looked at it when it came out earlier? Or anything else, Dwayne, that we needed to clarify? I think we're good, huh?
No, I did. I believe we covered everything. And if there's any questions around the general notations at the bottom, obviously we're available.
Good.
Good.
May I hear a motion to accept the finance report? Dwayne Sims has made a motion to. May I have a second?
I'll second.
Jed Donahue has seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion is carried. Governance development head of school reports are attached, sent them out. So that being said, I think we need to move on to our audit. And so we welcome our auditors.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate you having us here today. We will recall for those of you who were able to be at the meeting, the planning meeting, where we talked about and went over what our audit approach was going to be this year. This is the follow-up to that. So now all that work we talked about doing is all done and complete. And so with that, I'm going to let Eric Willie, who was the lead person and has been the lead person on your audit, he's going to go over the results with you, and then you know if you have any questions. And you're a fairly small group. If you have a question as he's going through the presentation, feel free, you know, to jump in, and we will navigate it for you at that point in time. So with that, I'll turn it over to Eric.
All right, good morning, folks. Thank you for having us out. We're here to go over the results of your fiscal year 2016 audit, just ended June 30th. You have three items in front of you. The first one, the nice, pretty bound copy. This is a summary of the audit results. The big, thick packet, looks like this, is your financial statements, footnotes, and the MD&A. This is the big one we'll be talking about. And then you also have a third, smaller letter. It's just a couple of recommendations that I'll go over as far as some of your interactions.
I'm sorry, do you have an extra?
Yes.
Thank you. Do you need an extra?
The thick one?
Yes.
Yep. There you go.
Thank you.
Can I get an extra of the smaller one, please?
Yes. This one?
There you go.
Everybody else? Anybody else?
We're going to share.
You got it?
Good. All right, great.
Thank you.
I'm going to start off looking at the summary of the audit results. If you can turn to page 2 in your bound copies. Once again, we're here discussing the fiscal year 2016 audit. The top, we finished on-site fieldwork for your audit on August 18, 2016. I was here with another staff for about a week, and we worked with Courtney very closely in April and went over a lot of documentation that you guys have as far as expenditures and revenues and your payroll. As far as the results of the audit, we issued unmodified or clean audit opinions on your governmental activities, your major fund, which is your general fund, and the supplementary information that accompanies your statements, which would include your combining general fund statements and the schedule of expenditures by natural classification. I want to point out that a clean audit opinion or an unmodified audit opinion is the highest level of assurance that we're able to provide under our audit standards. I'm actually going to jump over to the financial statements really quick, and I want to point out some of the highlights. If you turn to pages 1 through 3, this is our independent auditor's report. This is, again, where we issue our unmodified opinion. Looking at page 1, management is responsible for the preparation and presentation of the financial statements in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. Our responsibility as the auditor is to audit those financial statements in accordance with not only general auditing standards, which every audited entity is required to comply with, but also government auditing standards, which holds us to a higher level of auditing standards. If you look at page 2, near the top of the page, the opinions paragraph, this is where we issued the opinion. This is the final cumulative result of the audit. And again, we issued unmodified or clean opinions on your financial statements as a whole. If you flip ahead a couple of pages, pages 4 through 11, this is your management's discussion and analysis. What this is it takes the information that's presented in the financial statements and provides some background and some context to it. So if you have someone outside your organization who's interested in learning more, or potential donors who want to learn more about your organization, your management's discussion and analysis, this is a great tool that you can point them to help them learn more about your organization, both operationally and financially. I'm not going to go over the information in this because it is a summary of the financial statements. So let's go ahead and jump to page 12, which is your statement of deposition. Your statement of that position is your balance sheet. It is presented on a full accrual basis, so it's similar to if you were a for-profit organization. This is what something similar to what you would see. It does include all of your assets, so all of your capital assets for building renovations. I know this year in fiscal year 16, there was a lot of work done with the gym floor and some major repairs to your HVAC system. So all of that is included in your assets. It does also include your one long-term liability, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. It's your net pension liability. I do just kind of want to go over some of the major highlights on your balance sheet. You ended the year with a very strong cash position. You ended up with $1.48 million in cash, which for a second year operation school is great. It's a very strong cash position. Your security deposits for both the building that we're in now as well as the one across the street was just entered into this year. I believe the new security deposit this year was about $50,000. That's reflected as an asset because in the future, if you do terminate the lease or move, you will get at least a portion of that back. Your capital assets net of depreciation, this is your other big asset, $390,000. Again, I talked about this includes some of the major gym floor repairs, HVAC repairs. It includes all the equipment and other capital furniture and other items that you purchased over the years. And that amount is presented net of the accumulated depreciation. So what the depreciation is doing is spreading out the cost of those assets over the estimated life of them. Looking a little bit further down the balance sheet, I want to point out the accrued salaries and related costs. Your accrued salaries amount is the summer pay, essentially, for your teachers. It's $436,000. You'll notice it's up about $125,000 from last year. That's due to two pieces. Number one, you expanded a little bit this year. You added a few teachers, and as a result of that, you're paying more teachers over the summer. Your total costs go up. This number also includes about $45,000 of an estimated accrued pension liability, or pension contributions, I'm sorry. I think you guys are aware of this. During the year, it was discovered that there was a subset of employees, I believe it was your assistant teachers. There was some incorrect coding that was done at first, and as a result of that, some pension contributions weren't made that were required. What we did is we calculated an estimate of the amount that you guys will end up paying in fiscal year 17. When we were here for field work, I knew you guys were still working with the state to figure out that exact number. In order to be conservative, we accrued an estimated liability for this in order to recognize what your true liability actually is. Also looking down the net pension liability, that's your other very significant liability, it's $384,000 this year. And it's up quite a bit from the year before, where it was about $4,000. I want to explain why this is. And I know we talked about this a little bit last year, but just as a refresher. So last year, the net pension liability was the result of a new accounting standard, GASB number 68. You'll probably hear Pam and I talk about GASB quite a bit. It's the Governmental Accounting Standards Board. They're the standard-setting body that issues what generally accepted accounting principles are for government organizations. And as of last fiscal year 2015, it was a new requirement that if you participate in a multi-employer pension, which you guys do as part of the state's pension plan, and that pension plan is underfunded, you're now required under this new standard to pick up a portion of that unfunded liability. So last year, your pension liability was about $4,000. And the reason it was so low is because that pension liability is actually measured on a one-year lag basis. So in fiscal year 2015, the actual pension liability was measured as of June 30th, 2014, when I think you just had Courtney in the plan. This year, we've rolled it forward for 1 year, and now you guys have roughly how many employees? Did you guys have about 30?
Close to 40 last year, yeah.
Closer to 40 employees that are now in the plan. So that's the reason that this number went up so much. I want to point out that you guys have absolutely no control over this. It will get bigger as you guys expand and add more employees into the plan. It will also change if the state's pension-funded status decreases or increases. Last year, the pension-funded status was about 95%. It was funded pretty well. In fiscal year 16, the markets took a downturn. Pension plan didn't do as well, and the funded status dropped to about 92.6%, I believe. Yes, 92.6%. So the reason, a part of that increase is also because the funded status of the plan decreased. Mm-hmm. Again, I want to point out that you guys have no control over this liability. You can't do anything about it. It is what the state tells you it is at the end of the year. There's really not much you can do with it.
You just get to explain it. Funding source looks at your balance sheet.
Exactly. And we've had several schools who have gone out and tried to get loans and bonds and that type of thing, and this has become an issue. I just want to point that out because we'll talk about something towards the end of the presentation that's very relevant to this. But I just, again, want to emphasize, this is something, it's a major liability that you guys have no control over. All right.
Keep going.
We got it.
Here.
Yes, potentially. I also do want to point out there's two other sections. You won't see if you're looking at for-profit statements. They're called deferred outflows. It means deferred outflows of resources and deferred inflows of resources. These are both related to the net pension liability. Just deal with some actuarial gains and losses to kind of smooth out any major changes in the net pension liability from year to year. Any questions? If you flip to page 13, this is your statement of activities. This is essentially your income statement on a full accrual basis. If you look at the first column on the left-hand side, your total expenses for the year were just under $3.8 million. I want to point out that because this is on the full accrual basis, it does include depreciation expense and some other adjustments that we made to record the net pension liability that we talked about on the previous page. About 75% of your total expenses are related to instructional services. This is all your salaries and benefits for teachers, as well as instructional supplies and other costs that go into the classrooms and both supporting learning environment. Your total revenues were $4,295,000. That number doesn't jump off the page because of the way the statements are formatted, the total doesn't show up. But that number is actually the sum of your charges for services for $62,000, which would be payments from students for school lunches, and any charges for students for school activities, or any other fees that you charge. It also includes your operating grants and contributions, which are your federal revenues for Title I and IDEA, I believe, are your two big ones. And it also includes your total general revenues towards the bottom, which were about $4 million. Your charges to school districts and payments from your primary government, which are payments from the state, they make up 93% of your total revenues, which is just about $4 million in total. For the year, you guys had a change in net position, which is essentially your net income of $503,000, which I want to point out for your second year of operations is very strong. We're very impressed. And your ending net position is $1,639,000. Pages 14 through 17, these are your fund-level financial statements. These are presented on a modified or accrual basis. What I want to point out here, the difference between your fund-level statements on the modified or accrual basis and the two statements that we just talked about, which are on the full accrual basis. What these statements are, pages 14 through 17, these focus on your current assets and your current liabilities. So it excludes the net pension liability, it excludes the capital improvements that you made to your building, and it focuses on what assets you have to pay your liabilities and what liabilities you owe in the near future, so within 1 year. Most of the information that's presented on this statement are similar to what's on the statement of net position. Again, it excludes your capital assets and your net pension liability. If in the future you guys have any debt, your debt won't show up here. So I'll just briefly look over the general fund balance on page 14. It was up about $395,000 from last year, with an ending fund balance of $1,158,000. And if you go to page 16, this is your fund level income statement. This is probably a little bit more similar to what you guys are used to seeing on a monthly basis at your meetings. Your total revenues for the general fund were $4,295,000, total expenses just over $3.9 million, and you had a net change in fund balance or net income of about $395,000. If you skip ahead to page 31, this is your budgetary comparison statement. The information here, as far as the actual amounts, is the same as the information that was just presented on the fund level income statement. What it also does is it takes your budget, your preliminary and final budget numbers, and compares just your actual results to your budget, which I'm sure you guys are used to seeing on a monthly basis. I do want to point out your total revenues for the year were about $79,000 above what you had estimated, which is a great result. Your total expenses were $77,000 below what you budgeted, which all that contributed to the net income that we talked about of about $395,000. As far as your variances, overall, you guys are pretty closely in line with your budget. I do want to point out state aid was about $52,000 higher than you guys expected. Mm-hmm. I believe there were some performance funds that were granted that you guys weren't expecting, which was great.
It was actually more the federal, it wasn't performance funds.
Okay. My apologies.
No, it's okay. It's more due to our numbers changing and the actual increases and the federal grant pieces being more relevant to the actual population that we have. So we get an estimate and then we get an actual. Okay. So when everything is trued up, mm-hmm. that's what the increase was.
That makes sense. My apologies, but it's exactly what Courtney said. I also do want to point out that some of your somewhat larger variances are also explained in the management's discussion analysis on pages 9 through 11. So if you're curious and just want to dig a little further into some of the specifics, you're free to look there and look at some of the explanations. Any questions on that?
And none of those are ones that we haven't talked about in our meetings each month to know which ones were running high or low or that type of thing.
Absolutely.
Spare time reading?
Absolutely.
Okay.
If there's no other questions in the statements, I'm going to jump back to the summary of the audit results.
If I may.
Sure.
You mentioned on page 12 around those non-current liabilities, specifically the pension liability balance. Is that something you plan on covering? You mentioned covering that a little bit.
We're
going to
talk about that
a little bit more.
Yeah,
excellent.
A little bit more when we get
one,
to that.
Just wanted to read it. Thank you.
Yep.
Anything else? So back on page 2 of the summary of the audit results, the second section of results. While we were here for field work, we came across a total of 8 required adjusted journal entries. A few of these were just kind of minor corrections and reclassifications, nothing significant. Just to talk about a couple of the larger ones, there were some reclassification entries that we had made just to kind of move some capital assets that were required into the right classified categories. As a result of that, we also had to correct depreciation expense. There were a few items in construction in progress that were actually placed in service prior to the end of the year, and as a result of that, we needed to start depreciating. The other entry that I talked about a little bit earlier was the entry to accrue the estimated liability for the required pension contributions for the assistant teachers for which pension contributions had been made for the year. Again, I know you guys are still working with the state to determine the exact amount that was required to be paid. This was an estimate that we used based on the total salaries for those teachers and the required fringe benefit range, which I believe was around 21% for fiscal year 16. Your other internal control systems, we looked at pretty closely. Your internal controls as far as processing your cash disbursements, so paying invoices, any revenues that come in from the state or from local sources, and your payroll controls were operating effectively. We did notice a couple of areas where we think some things can be tweaked. We'll talk about that at the end. Overall, they're operating effectively, but again, things can always be improved. The open items, as we did in the past.
No, I was going to say, we just added it to me.
Oh, all right. Did I
know
that today?
All right.
That's why I said that. You didn't know that.
I didn't know that. All right, well, it's no longer an open item. Great.
It's now closed.
It's now closed.
And then looking forward to the timeline, as you guys know, your audit report is due to the state by September 30th. There are no issues that we see that would prevent that from happening. We have the manager representation letter. That was the open items, so we should be able to file very soon.
And you guys are submitting on our behalf of them, right?
Great, thank you. Flipping ahead, pages 3 and 4. This is the results of your financial performance framework. I know Pam mentioned at the beginning of the meeting. When we're here for the audit plan, we talked about the financial performance framework and how we're going to incorporate that into the audit. This is the results of that. I'm going to go over it fairly quickly. You guys are overall are in great shape. Looking at number one, the current ratio, which is your current assets and current liabilities. And also, I do want to point out that all these numbers are based on the statement of deposition and statement of activities on pages 12 and 13. So if you'd like to go back and see how these numbers are calculated, you can look at those pages for the numbers. Your first one, your current ratio, which is your current assets and current liabilities. Schools must have a current ratio of at least 1.1 to meet this metric. You guys have a current ratio of 3.2, so you're well above that requirement, so you meet that standard. Number two, the unrestricted days cash. Schools have to have at least 60 days cash on hand, which is based on your total cash amount at the end of the year and your total expenses divided by 365 days. You guys have 142 days cash on hand, which is, again, well above that standard, so you meet that metric. Number three, your enrollment variance. For schools open less than 3 years, which is the category you guys fall into, your actual enrollment must equal or exceed 95% of your planned enrollment. And you guys are right on target there at 95%, so you meet that metric. Number four does not apply to you. If you guys get debt in the future, so if you take out a bank loan or issue bonds, this will apply. Flipping it ahead to page number four, your total margin. Schools open less than 3 years, your annual total margin must be positive. Basically what this is your net income or your change in net position that we talked about from your statement of activities divided by your total revenues. It's somewhat akin to your gross profit margin if you guys were for-profit. That makes it a little more clear. And I do want to point out that moving forward, eventually this will be based on a three-year aggregate once you guys have had 3 years of operations. So if you do have one bad year for whatever reason, it'll be a little bit easier to meet this metric. For this year, it's just based on fiscal year 16. You guys have an operating margin of 11.71%, so you meet that standard there. Number six, your debt-to-asset ratio, which for you guys includes your total liabilities, so it includes the net pension liability. Schools have to have a debt-to-asset ratio of 0.9 to meet this metric. You guys have a debt-to-asset ratio of 0.43, so again, you're well within the margins of that metric. Number seven, cash flow. Again, I want to point out you guys end up with a very strong cash position. You increased your cash balance by about $473,000, so you met this metric without any issues. And number eight, again, is not applicable because you have no debt. Pages five and six, this is a summary of required communications that as your auditors we're supposed to communicate to you. I'm going to go over it very quickly. Most of these items we've talked about in our audit plan meeting and in this meeting as well as in our discussions with Courtney and her team. The big thing that I do want to point out, there were no uncorrected misstatements or misstatements that we noted that were not corrected as part of our audit procedures. All of the entries that we posted were approved by management and are included in the financial statements. And on page six, I also do want to point out that as part of our audit procedures, we uncovered noted nothing that would indicate any indications of fraud or any illegal acts. Any questions on that? Okay. The last thing I want to go over is the third packet. It's our recommendation letter. Near the bottom of the page, this is our recommendation that we'd issued in the prior year. We always discuss any recommendations that we make in a prior year and discuss the status in the current year. Last year, we had recommended that an inventory listing be prepared for your fixed assets. Any computers that are purchased, furniture, equipment, anything of that nature. We do recommend that this inventory listing that's prepared also be used as the basis for your fixed asset listing. From talking with Courtney and working with her team, we noticed that a technology inventory has been put together. There is a listing of computers. We would like to see it expanded a little bit more, though, to include some furniture and a few other items. So this recommendation is still applicable for this year.
My understanding was that there was a number that if anything's below that number in our purchases, it doesn't land on that. If anything was above it,
that's correct.
Okay, and I think that's why we ended up not. I don't remember what the number is off the top of my head, but there
it was 1,000.
Right. And that would be on technology.
Do you have an actual policy? The way to do it is, so maybe you might want to revisit your policy.
Okay.
So you're not required to have a threshold that low. You can move it up to 5,000 if you wish.
No, I mean, I think with the policy the way that it is, that our purchases, the only ones that we had of inventory were technology, right?
Right, right.
So furniture, right. Each item of furniture, and there's nothing that, materials, it really was only technology, which is why they're not landing in that.
Okay.
When you say other than technology,
right.
I think that's because nothing else landed in that.
Right. The other thing that we noticed, too, was that the inventory listing didn't have
right.
a historical cost amount.
I got to go back to that piece. That was something we need pictures on there.
The next item we noticed for our current year recommendations related to some expenditure controls, so controls over processing invoices and payments. We did note one instance this year as part of our procedures where a vendor actually submitted the same invoice twice, about a month or two apart. It was paid, so the vendor was overpaid. It's kind of a tricky situation when a vendor submits an invoice for the same thing twice. That can be a little bit more difficult to catch than you would normally have in your standard controls. A couple of things that we recommended, just to kind of make that a little bit easier to catch in the future, stamping all your invoices as paid when they're received, and also the big one we think would really help here is including an additional staff member in the approval process. So if it's for physical therapy services, including an additional employee who directly works with that physical therapist or oversees those services, making sure that person's included in the approval process. So if you get an invoice and you show that person the invoice and they go, person, this person wasn't in school, they didn't give us anything, why was this invoice received? That type of thing can help manage that issue. It's not a huge issue. It happened one time, we noted no other instances where it did occur, and it was only for about $1,800.
That money was applied to that person's account later. Like we caught it internally as well, and it offset a future bill. So I don't want you to think that we did just overpay in that.
Right, absolutely.
It was figured out and doubtless adjusted here first.
The next one.
One misfit bill in 2 years, come on.
That's not bad. See the binder of invoices? And really, you're right, to catch it, the intent of these types of recommendations is to maybe just add to something going forward, just to
absolutely.
Maybe someone that.
And we do a process where once they are submitted and then approved, that they do get marked approved.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were two copies of them.
That's the
usual. The courage to make mistakes.
The next item I want to talk about was the personnel and benefit information that's included at first. Again, going back to that subset of teachers that were assuming coming in wasn't entered correctly in the first pension contributions were made. We recommend that everybody's information be reviewed in the system just to make sure that all the coding's correct, that pension contributions are being withheld properly, all their benefit information is correct. And we also noted, as part of the net pension liability, we have to do some additional employee census testing related to that. Basically, what we do is we go through personnel files and match up just some general demographic information like date of hire, gender, marital status, that type of thing. Those factors all are very important in the actuarial evaluations that the state do, which is the basis for your net pension liability. We noted one instance where one employee's marital status was wrong. We've since learned that's actually a fairly common error at several other schools. It's one of those things that when employees transfer from one school to another, a lot of places will update that information. So we just recommend that a comprehensive review of everyone's information be done at some point, just to make sure that all that information.
And that person was a state employee who had followed them from their previous.
Right.
It wasn't that we entered it wrong, it had pulled
right.
over.
That's why we're finding, that's why I said, we're finding a lot of those situations. That's funny.
Well, I mean,
just
don't
tell my husband.
Right. And then the last thing I want to talk about, this is the big one that we really want to bring to your attention, so Pam will probably jump in at some point. GASB statement number 75. We talked a lot about the net pension liability both last year and this year and what it represents. The thing that I really want to emphasize again with GASB statement number 68, which requires you to report your net pension liability, is that it's a liability you have no control over. But GASB statement number 75, which is going to be effective for your fiscal year 2018, so 2 years from now, it's going to be the same song and dance this time with other post-employment benefits. The really important thing with this is that you guys have about a $375,000 liability. I'm sorry, off the top of my head, I don't remember the exact number. The state's pension plan is about 92-93% funded. OPEB is 4.9% funded. So you can imagine the liability is going to be significantly larger when this does take effect. Again, this is another liability that you're not going to have any control over whatsoever. You're just going to have to record what the state tells you the number is at the end of the year. There's a lot of other information that goes into the specifics of GASB statement number 75. I won't bore you with the details too much. If you can't sleep tonight, go for it, read through.
What's the real impact on us, Eric, besides on paper?
Absolutely. So that's why this is even in this letter. Mm-hmm. So this is something that we are discussing and bringing to every charter school's attention. And actually, we've taken it one step further and we have begun the dialogue at the state level. So for your reporting purposes, as you know, not only are you being fiscally responsible yourself by having an independent audit and having one place where all of your information is brought together, but you also are accountable to the Division of Accounting, who uses this information and incorporates it into the state's audit report, the Auditor of Accounts, and the Department of Education. Now, the Auditor of Accounts, you know, they're concerned about oversight, internal controls, et cetera. Division of Accounting, concerned about this final presentation. Department of Education, concerned about the financial reporting framework. Right now, they're using the financial reporting framework based upon these financial statements that you're presenting. And as Eric mentioned earlier, your financial statements are presented on the basis of accounting that conforms to governance. So you're under the governmental accounting standards, the GASB set of rules. But you're a nonprofit. Okay, so the question becomes, when, as you know, in some other instances, when you are where you're similar to other governments, another public school, that's fine. Where you're different is where we run into issues, and that's where we're running into this issue, okay? You, as a nonprofit, if you were to report as a nonprofit and your financial statements were presented under the Financial Accounting Standards Board rules or the FASB rules, these liabilities would not show because that's not a for-profit role. So where it becomes very impactful for you is, and all charter schools is, so for those who are approaching grantors who have debt, some of the charter schools have issued bonds, they have debt covenants, and all the things that the state is measuring, you get these financial reporting frameworks, they have third parties measuring that. And they're failing the debt covenants because of these liabilities. So it is very, very significant, and we're very concerned for what this is going to mean to you. And even if none of that applied, you being fiscally responsible, looking at these statements, as these numbers that you can't manage get larger and larger, it's going to take from you the ability to see, but how are we really? It's going to manipulate your data in such a manner that you can't really look at yourself as how successful or how are we really operating. So as Eric said, it's 2 years before that's going to land. We are very hopeful that we can get the charter community. We've already talked to Charter Network. We've been talking to every one of our charter schools. I've had a preliminary conversation with the Division of Accounting. They are on board from that preliminary conversation. They can't see an issue with them getting FASB statements versus GASB statements. They could still do what they need to do in terms of the statewide audit. So it's a big issue. You're going to hear more about it, but you know we're jumping up and down right now. Because, you know, just as you are questioning and looking, and I can tell you have an expertise and an experience, and you're looking at that going, what does this mean? It's you know, potentially going to be worse. So that's the issue.
But aside from the optics of it, see, right now we're talking about this, so this is something on paper.
Right.
But what's to stop the state from saying, they've now put on paper that we are obligated to pay the unfunded liability.
Right.
What's to stop them from saying at some point, okay, now you have to fund this?
Well, that's a great, that's a very good question. With the pension, remember that this liability is an actuarially determined number. Mm-hmm. So therefore, they would be hard-pressed because they also rely on those actuarial determinations to establish the rate of contribution. So the only thing they could do is modify that rate of contribution. But there are some key indicators, and it comes from an actuarial perspective. So the intent is really never to say it's 100%, because this is, you know, a pension plan. So it's got to have a long lifespan.
Sure.
So therefore, that's not going to happen on the pension side. Now, the reason that's a very good question is, when you're talking about post-employment benefits, right now, the reason it's only 4.9% funded is because the state of Delaware, like a lot of governments that have post-employment benefits, operate on a pay-as-you-go. So in other words, with the pension, there's a pension trust, and there are pension trustees. And it's like but it's like a real pension. With post-employment benefits, you have the option to say, you know, we know that we've promised this, but we're just going to manage on a year-to-year basis. So it's pay-as-you-go. So the contribution you're making every year is really to cover whoever they're paying that year. If the state determines, and when they see the magnitude of this liability, because remember, the state's portion of this is going to go on their financial statements. So they're going to get slammed as well on this in a big way. So there is a risk that they'll say, I think we need to start to establish a fund, and we need a trust for OPEB. We're either going to change the benefit to manage this liability, or we're going to establish a trust that could impact you. Because right now, of your benefits, there's like 2% maybe of that total benefits percentage that you pay to the state. If they elected to start to determine a contribution rate like they do with the pensions, that's where it would impact you. Very good question.
It seems like they have no choice, no matter what they do.
Well, it's, you know what, you don't know what they're going to do in terms of that benefit and the funding of it, but I do think right now you can protect your autonomy as a nonprofit charter school in at least getting better financial reporting. That you can do now.
So Pam, can you summarize what you're working on that it would look like so I can understand?
So it would basically look like, it under a nonprofit format, this financial statement that you have, there would be no MD&A.
Okay.
There would be 4 financial statements. So out of this book that has, there would be 4 financial statements.
Okay.
A balance sheet, an income statement,
okay,
a statement of functional expenses, and a cash flow statement, and your footnotes. What we would discuss, like with the Department of Education, some of these extra statements in the back, like a budget statement, you know, they may be using some of that just to monitor, but they may want to design a couple of statements that they think would be helpful that would just be supplementary. And you can do that under the FASB rules, but the basic statements would be those statements.
So it sounds like it would almost benefit them.
A very good point as well, because right now, and so last year when that pension liability first got recorded, in the financial reporting framework model, some schools who have very large liabilities, they've been in existence longer, they have more teachers, they had always met the framework, and all of a sudden they did not. So we went back to the Department of Education and sort of pleaded the case. You gotta remember, and you probably know this, but in terms of the usefulness of these, okay, Division of Accounting understands this. They understand this. Department of Education does not. This is, they don't get this for a district school, okay? So they're working with what they have to try to come up with these metrics, but don't for a minute think they really understand accounting principles. That's not what they do. So when we went back to them and said, listen, this pension liability, and explained it, their response was, okay, we understand that. We'll not count it. Well, now, if the Department of Education should, and they should be in a position where they should be able to come up with this framework, and they shouldn't have to pick and choose, right? They should just be able to, this will benefit them.
Yeah.
Because then they won't have to do that. They can take their framework, they can take your audited numbers, they can put them in, and that can be it, and they can use that effectively. So that's where it will be of impact.
And to the financial framework revisions that you've seen.
Yes. We're still good. Good. We're still good. Yeah. Because
I know they've been working on that.
They've been working on making some modifications to the framework. I actually think it will make it more simple. Mm-hmm. And actually, looking at you as a nonprofit, which, by the way, I know you're a public school. You're also a nonprofit organization. And depending upon whom you're representing yourself to, okay, if I'm in front of the Longwood Foundation, I want them to know I'm a nonprofit organization serving students, right? So depending on your audience, you now are in a realm that they understand, okay? Because nobody with this kind of set of financial statements or government accounting principles are approaching funding agencies. They don't even know. It's not their fault. Again, it's not their fault. But I've been with some of those conversations. They don't know what they're looking at. Direct me to what is meaningful. So I really think it's a great solution.
Yeah.
So if you can help me understand what we don't know, right? And I say that in the context of, I agree with both you and Yvonne that it would be simpler. Yeah. Nevertheless, we're here entertaining it, and it's something that has been instituted, presumably after review. So, so my question really is what can you tell me what may potentially be? What do you see in your professional opinion as potential roadblocks ahead as we present these alternatives under FASB as opposed to GAAP?
So the roadblock is going to be educating the existing users in a contentious environment. So now you're going to be once again going forth with something for the charter school environment. And as you know, there are any number of people that just for the sake of change and you do something different is indicative of you doing something nefarious. That's going to be the biggest roadblock, which is why I said this has got to be collaborative.
Yeah.
It's got to include the Division of Accounting, the State Auditor's Office, the Department of Education. It has got to include those parties. The way to do this, as I said, I've had a preliminary conversation. The other thing, as you know, on June 30th, there was new legislation passed, which is designed to bring the Auditor's Office more involved. We've already had a preliminary meeting with them. And we have already sat down with this is what's being done for every charter school. We've already had a preliminary conversation just to bring them up to speed, and it went very well. So now we've opened a dialogue. Now we'll be able to sit back down with them. And some of the things in that meeting that they didn't realize were some of these implications for charter schools. They don't know about funding and going to banks. That's not their world, you know. So opening that dialogue hopefully will help us. Same thing with Department of Education, helping them see. So ideally you would take one of the charter school audits, you would put it in the format of what it would look like, and then you would start to present that, right? And then you would say, let me show you how you still get what you need from this presentation, and then let me give you the reasons it's significant. So it's going to be educating and putting all of that together.
Pam, one of the things that you said too is there are certain pieces that appeal to funders and things like that. Can you point us to that direction as well so that we know which of those in the things that we have would be the right things to include when we're applying for grants and things like that?
That's my question.
Right. Well, when you're applying for grants, they're going to want your audit, right? So you're going to have to give them this whole big thing. So the things that you want to do...
Not the summary. You say they really want this
piece.
The big,
thick one?
They want the big, thick. They're going to want the big, thick one.
Okay.
But to Courtney's point, is there a FASB version and a GASB version? Because we are a nonprofit. That is a huge question. Like, when you say...
There's not right now.
Okay.
There's not right now.
But...
Because right now, the Department of Education has said, and or it's been assumed from day one... that charter schools will report under GASB.
Right.
So when we give this to somebody, they know what they're looking. They know what they're going to. We don't need to highlight any of the things to this. So Jen, you have a copy of this.
Well, when you provide this to funding sources, I would probably encourage them to look at those fund level statements, like the ones 14, 15, and 16. Or better yet, if you can get away with it, better yet, direct them to the MD&A. If you would like a narrative discussion of our school, it's provided on pages 4 through 10. You know, which, again, I can tell you, and I know this was a long presentation, but until we can change this, the more you understand it, the more you can have that dialogue. Because when they come back to you and say, ask about the pension liability, you can say, well, that's an actuarial number based upon our participation in the statewide pension plan, but we are totally current with all contributions and will continue to be so, and we've funded them and they're in our budget.
Funded versus unfunded is the distinction.
You've got to know this stuff enough to be able to navigate those questions. And we would also encourage you, when you have those kinds of questions, We're happy to be part of that conversation. We've done it for any number of charters where, you know, it's just helping to navigate, you know, something they're not used to seeing.
Right. So you had stated earlier, as a nonprofit, the balance sheet, the income, the functional expenses, and the cash flow are the key things from a nonprofit's point of view.
Right.
As it relates to what you just said about the state pension, is there an asterisk that you know, is all-encompassing, if you will, that says exactly what you just said. You know, so that when we are going for funding, it's got an asterisk on it. We call it out. We recognize that this may scare you, but here, let us tell you what it is and why it's included. Do you know what I mean? Because then we proactively circumvented the question, if you will, when it comes to a funding nature.
Right, right. Well, that's what you want us to help you with, to maybe...
I mean, in the immediate term, I don't think that's necessary, because the figure is not scary, but yeah.
Well, that's true too. Right now, you're in pretty good shape, and the hope would be that in a perfect world by next year, but at least by 2018, this has got to get fixed. It's got to get fixed.
But I really appreciate you explaining it so clearly, because I think that as we go before funders, that we do need to have the ability to understand it and explain it, and I think that works in our favor.
Right.
When
that's
that happens.
That's crucial. You're right. That's crucial.
So, I mean, it's fine, and I'm happy you're coming with us, Pam, you know, but I think that one of the strengths of the presentations at these things are that the board understands and knows what they're talking about.
That's
so, this has been very enlightening and very helpful. Yeah.
I think the county is helpful based on how many times you said to us this is out of your control. So.
Yeah, we have to work around it. Are there any other questions for Pam and Eric? Certainly appreciate your time.
Thank you.
This has been, we're happy our numbers are where they are. But we're happy to understand why they're there and what we need to do to go forward. So thank you so much for working with us.
Your feedback on refinements is so helpful, too, so thank you. Good.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's going to be, you'll be hearing more as we go. we're just going to help you fight the battle. We can't really, we'll give you the tools, but it's going to really be up to the community of the charter schools. And as I said, the Charter School Network is very much aware. We've had conversations about this, you know, so the message is getting out.
And we continue to learn how to operate as
right.
public and charter, so it's a continuous
right.
process of education in my mind.
It really is. Yeah. It really is, as unfortunate as it is that this is the issue that's driving it, it really is another very clear indicator of how you, areas where you are not like another public school. It's just another one of those. So.
Right.
Just another one of those.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is there any other business that needs to be discussed? If not, may I hear a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Angela Angenes made a motion to adjourn. May I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mila Duckworth. Motion is passed, and this adjournment has taken place at 9:14.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
If you have not gotten your information to Janet, tell me please do so. She's sending me fireworks this morning. So please.